What's up, everybody? This week I'm joined by Greg Gregory as we sit down and talk about a game series that launched Sega into the stratosphere. Sonic the Hedgehog's 1, 2, 3, and Knuckles. That and a whole lot more is to come on this week's episode of the 90s Podcast. Welcome to the show. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the 90s Podcast right here in the Because Movie Network. We'll be doing well today, and I'm joined by Greg Gregory. Greg, how are you, man?
Hey, good, man. Good to be back again.
Yes. Thank you for coming on last week with the speed episode. I really, really appreciate it. But we're moving on from movies, and we're moving on to video games. So
yeah, getting back to games.
Back to the games. And there's three games that we're going to be looking through today. Actually, technically four games.
Okay.
But it's Sonic the Hedgehog 1, 2, and 3, and we might peek our head in at Sonic and Knuckles, depending on how much time we've got.
Okay.
So, but before we go ahead and get started, go check out becausemovienetwork.com. That's where you find our archives. Go check out our social media pages on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And don't forget to check out anywhere you find podcasts where you can find this very, very podcast. All that is in the link tree in the description below. And don't forget to subscribe, share, comment, and all that usual nonsense that everybody says to do. Hang on. Okay, much better. Okay, sorry about that. we're recording this over a two-way thing, and my camera was way, way off the off where it should be. So, anyway, enough of the machinations of recording. You ready to dive running, man?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. All right, so Sonic the Hedgehog, what did that mean to you as a Sega kid?
It attracted me much more immediately than Nintendo did.
Yeah.
Like, I think Mario, I kind of had to, like, warm up to it. Because, I mean, it was fun and it was cool. But, like, Sonic just always had, like, this edge to him that I found very appealing. It was very different. So, to me, it was just, like, the eye-catchiness of it, you know? And just how it was just... It just... Fast, you know, and fun, you know?
Yeah. Because that's what they wanted. They wanted speed with this one, which is ironic because they chose the hedgehog as the mascot, which is known for being one of the slowest animals on the planet.
Yeah, not this one, though, apparently.
Not this one. They're not blue either, but...
Yeah, right. But,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, there's definitely a focus on the speed, and I feel like that they continue that trend as they move forward without, you know, peering too far in the future. I just think it's really cool that they... From playing one and then playing the subsequent ones, you can tell that they really listened to what people were saying.
Yeah.
And they tried to incorporate some of those things into the subsequent versions. So, yeah, it's a really beautiful piece of 90s nostalgia, for sure.
Definitely, definitely. And Sonic was a fast game. You had to be on your fingers to get that one through, because I tried hard at Sonic 1... doing a stream of it a couple of years ago, and it just failed spectacularly. Like, I got to the second room of the second level, you know, each time, and then I just couldn't get past the next thing because I was going too fast or too slow, depending on which way you're looking at it.
You gotta know the level. I think that's part of it, but yeah, I think it's a game that's designed to be played quickly.
Yeah.
Because, like, the more quickly you play it, the more kind of satisfying it is. The movement, like, as humans, we're naturally attracted to movement. We subconsciously love it. We don't even realize it most times. Ever be doing something, you know, focus on something and just catch something in the corner of your eye?
Yeah.
What happens? You gotta look up from that book or that tablet or whatever and take a peek at it. So we're naturally attracted to movement, and they definitely satisfy that in this entire series, for sure.
Definitely, definitely. While Sonic the Hedgehog has been described as a platform game, I don't know about that. I mean, it's got a lot more to it than just the traditional platformer, you know?
It is. I was thinking about that when I was playing Sonic 1 just recently, and I thought that exact same thing. Is this a platformer? Because I was actually jumping on some platforms waiting for one to move over and having to time it. But and I actually came to the exact same conclusion. I was like, it is, but it isn't.
Yeah, it's...
Like, that's only part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say it is. It's its own special platformer.
It's a Sonic platformer.
Yeah, absolutely. It's its own. It kind of like Mario was its own thing. There's other platformers before that, but it had its own distinction. And this is exactly what you're looking at now, is their distinction of that platforming idea.
There you go. The first Sonic game was released on July 23rd, 1991. The Sonic 2 was released November 24th, 1992. So just over a year development in between it, and another year development between it for Sonic 3 that was released on February 2nd, 1994. And
Yeah.
between all three games, they sold 37 million copies.
Yeah, it was huge, man. Sonic became, right up there with like Bart Simpson and Mario and some other iconic characters practically overnight. I mean, we talked a little bit about that and a couple episodes ago, but yeah, I mean, it was a very, very quick rise to popularity, and it was the talk of the playground, of the bus. I mean, who's got a Sega? Okay, him. Okay, his house. Boom, we're gonna play Sonic. Like it was a thing. And then once Mortal Kombat came out, well, turned into that. But
the kid who had the Sega, so that's where you pile in.
yeah, exactly. So I was the kid with the Sega there for a little while after, I think it was Christmas of 92 or 91, I can't remember. But yeah, I had another friend across the street that had a Super Nintendo. So if you wanted Super Nintendo, we'd go to his house and we'd go to my house to play Sega. So I'm sure every kid had a situation that was similar to that,
Yeah.
unless they were one of those kids that whose parents bought them every single console as soon as it came out. But I wasn't necessarily that privileged, so we had to make do. But we always did and had a good time. And Sonic was a huge part of that.
Yeah, a lot of people put a lot of money on a lot of credit cards if they got everything.
Oh yeah.
But in the 1980s, right, Sega was doing a lot of Genesis ports of arcade games that they were making.
Yeah, they Neo Geo and stuff like that. That kind of arcade presence. Yeah, because they were a game company to start off, and then they kind of, if I'm not mistaken, then they kind of teetered into consoles.
And then teetered back out to be a game company again.
Well, they were, I don't know if they teetered would be the word in that. They were kind of
Kicked.
forced to. They were pushed out of the market basically by the Sega Saturn killed them, and that was a fantastic console, but there was just so many issues with it, and a lot of it I thought was timing. Just the fact that its features were just way ahead of its time. But yeah, I mean, it's amazing that they're still around, and it still trips me out that they do stuff with Nintendo. It just trips me out, man.
Sonic and Mario do games together now, which
That's
is.
that. That's that. That's Twilight Zone to me, dude. That's that. But still, it's cool. I'm glad to see the proliferation of both of those, that me and my son can both enjoy Mario still 30 years
Yes.
later. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, me and the tank are in the middle of playing a Mario playthrough right now, and he's Mario, I'm Luigi, which is kills the kind of older brother younger brother dynamic, really,
The
doesn't
dynamic,
it?
yeah.
But we're going through it, and he's way ahead of me right now because he's got his. I'm old. My fingers, they don't move as much as quick as they used to, So his fingers are a little more nimble, a little more up to snuff, should we say? So he's getting all the extra levels and stuff like that, and I'm just teetering along,
Well, the other thing too, man, he doesn't have near the responsibility you do, so
No.
he's probably got a little more time to sharpen stuff up because you're busy with work and potting and all the other side sound stuff. Yeah, so I mean, he's got more time to work on it right now, man.
Right. He needs to get back to class is what he needs to do. But Sega wanted a stronger foothold against Nintendo, and in 88 Japan began an in-house competition to find a rival to Nintendo's Mario.
That's smart.
It is smart. Now, the thing is, though, they wanted a rival to Mario. They wanted an equal. And you can't make an equal to Mario, especially if he's that. He was the breakout star of somebody else's game. I mean, it's technically it's the Donkey Kong universe, not the Mario universe.
Right. You gotta do your own thing. Because I think if they had tried to go with like any type of dude or person, human, it probably wouldn't have worked because it would have been too close to it would. Okay, like for instance, when I was a kid and I saw this, I just thought, wow, that looks badass and it looks fun. I didn't think, oh wow, Sega's trying to, you know, get a market advantage on this obvious competitor and blah 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 blah. You know, I didn't care about any of that. To me, it was slick and it was new, it was cool, it was exciting, different. So yeah, they really did a good job on that, on creating their own thing.
Well, Sega wanted a rival, and they wanted it to be as iconic as Mickey Mouse.
That's okay. That's pretty lofty goal there, but I mean, they fell short, and they created an icon for a decade, for generations.
Yeah.
So I mean, not too bad, really.
Not too bad. I mean, they fell short, but they fell short in a good way.
They fell short of that extremely lofty goal.
Yes.
I mean, that's like saying we want to be bigger than the Beatles and Elvis combined.
Yeah.
Like, that's just not possible. It's not physically possible unless you, like, held everyone in the world at gunpoint somehow and forced them to like your band. Like, this is the only, you know what I mean? Like,
don't give me ideas.
So it's impressive, man. It's impressive what they were able to do. And comparatively to the history of Nintendo in a really short amount of time.
Yeah, I mean, they tried to use Alex Kidd, and he was all right, I guess.
It wasn't anything special. See, it was a dude. It was just a regular, you know.
Who had a big fist.
I mean, come on, a hedgehog that can run like 200 miles an hour? Like, come on, man. Like, that's obviously, it's going to be way better.
Well, that's what they did. After building the engine designed for speed, the company eliminated all mascots that were not based on fast animals. So as time went on, they started to focus on animals who could roll up into a ball. And that's where the hedgehog came from. So Sonic was born after combining Felix the Cat and Mickey Mouse.
Okay.
So that's where a lot of its features come from, especially the eyes and so on and so forth.
Okay. You know,
and he was originally a teal color. So that's like, I don't know. Sonic the Hedgehog teal?
Yeah, that's might be too... 290s, like two on the nose 90s. But I think that we also, like, when you're outdoors a lot, teal's kind of like an in-between color.
Yeah,
so that could be difficult, especially if your topography and your backgrounds are changing, like forest and ocean, that could get blurry, you know what I mean? It could kind of like blend in a little too well.
That's why they went for darker blue. In fact, they went for Sega blue, as they called it.
Okay, well, yeah, that was going to be my next point. You're basically going to have to commit to one color, one end of the spectrum or the other. Like, you're going to go all green, you're going to go all blue. Like, but, yeah, I think that was a good choice. It's distinct. And there's also shading and stuff on it, so there's actually a couple different colors going on there. But, yeah, the base color is definitely that Sega blue.
Yeah, and with this new mascot, Sega needed a game for him that was speedy and built on speed. And programmer Yuji Naka is responsible for building the game. He'd worked for Sega doing ports of games such as Ghouls and Ghosts, and he wasn't happy with his porting of them. He was a fan of Mario, and he wanted the game to be as simple as possible, played with only one button.
Essentially, the first one is that.
Yeah.
Because there's no spin dash.
No.
So, I mean, and also, really, in the subsequent ones, I mean, that's pretty much all you get is a spin dash. So, yeah, I think that was by design. I mean, it says there it was, but I think they did it. What I mean is, I think they did it that way because they wanted to lend itself to the speed. Because, I mean, there's loop-de-loops and boosters and, you know, all kinds of things encouraging you to go very, very fast in every single Sonic up to today. So,
yeah, well,
yeah, definitely. That's a hallmark of it, definitely.
Definitely, because when they put the game together, they wanted it for speed, and the game was just too fast. I mean, how fast are the Sonic games? Do you imagine it being faster than what they are?
Yeah, yeah. So, I think maybe some of that probably had to do with perspective, too.
Yeah.
Because a lot of it has to do with what's happening in the background just as much as the foreground. So I'm sure, you know, they can literally slow it down, but there's other ways that you can kind of do that by manipulating what the background is doing.
Yeah.
How quickly it's moving per frame or per, you know, cycle or second or however they have it organized. But, Yeah, I could see how it could have been too fast, but I think it's now it's appropriate. It like it doesn't go too fast. Like it doesn't. Some games like it, you can go too fast. Like you can run almost off the screen, like in bad games.
Yeah,
and this is not one of those. They have it tuned really carefully so that everything kind of moves really fluidly. It's, and if you're moving that fast, it's got to be appropriate on both of those ends of the spectrum. And they've, you know, always been very, very skillful with that.
Yeah, definitely. Just, what was I going to say? Sonic, you know, was then, you know, it became the franchise. It became the franchise player for Sega. And mainly because of, you know, as iconic as the character was, the soundtrack was just as iconic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, they wanted Yugo Kazama to write the soundtrack. However, the production team rejected the idea. They believed his music style would not fit, as he's most famous for psychedelic surf music.
Yeah, that's not... It didn't fit it. Like, they needed something a little more, like, high-tech, modern kind of sounding.
Yeah.
You know? And what you have on even the very first one is just video game masterpiece music.
Yeah.
I mean, it is, hits all the styles, all the moods, all the notes, catchy, you know, different instruments. It's all synthesized, but there's a variety of different instruments. Yeah, that was one of the things I really, really look forward to talking about, is how great the music in this game is. It's fantastic.
Well, let's talk about it now, because, you know, we've got a couple of pages going in there. You know, every Sonic 2, right, is the game that I know the best of, because that's the one I've completed more.
Because
Sonic 1, I never got past a certain point, but Sonic 3, I didn't play that often, because by the time it came out, I'd shifted to, you know, fighting games and sports sims.
Tekken Tag had come out, or Tekken 3, so there was other, you know, other things. I think we got older.
Yeah.
So I think our video gaming elevated a little bit, and suddenly a game that needed one button didn't seem that appealing, maybe.
Didn't satisfy us enough.
Yeah, but now I kind of like it. It's, you know, video games should be relaxing, and sometimes, you know, when you're playing Skyrim on legendary difficulty and you're trying to get through Craig's Lane Cabin or something like that, and you keep getting killed over and over again by this bandit leader, that can be stressful.
Yes.
So sometimes it's good to me playing Sonic now is like mentally cracking open a beer and leaning back and taking a break.
Yeah.
It's relaxing, it's fun. It reminds me of being a kid, being in the arcades, being at friends' houses, just zone out and not really have to do a whole lot at the same time.
Yeah, it's just, you know, press the button one way, hit one button.
It's very satisfying. It's just it's just the way it's set up. They're very, very meticulous about everything. They wanted to make the game like Mario, and it is a lot like Mario in that it's very well programmed.
Yes.
And I like how they didn't skimp anything, especially in this music, man. It's absolutely beautiful.
Music's iconic. I mean, they used, they got a J-pop singer and bassist from the band Dreams Come True called Mesto Nakamura. And he composed all the material for Sonic the Hedgehog. It's just beautiful music. Video game music. Dude. It's off the chart.
It's, you know, and even like, the soundtrack too, but also the stingers and all,
yes,
like when you finish the level, like for anybody that knows, stinger is like it's a production element. Basically, it's a short piece that kind of either introduces or wraps up something or transitions one thing to another. So there's one at the end. It's like, and, you know, I'm kind of just hacking my way through it because there's all kinds of stuff going on there. But like just being able to capture the emotion and the excitement, and then have each piece of music, you know, match the feel of the level as well, the design of it. There's a casino level in part two where it's like this really swanky, like
Big Ben style.
And you're bouncing around, bang 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 bang. So it's like, it's just very, very well composed, very thoughtful about the placement and the composition of each piece. Yeah, man, it's absolutely really, really an A plus. Like most games, music is kind of bottom, lower of the list. But it seemed like everything in this game was like at the top of the list.
Yeah.
The series, I mean, there was a lot of care and detail put into it.
Step one, music. Step two, make Sonic fast. Step one, you know, it just...
Yeah,
it,
make music better. Because they, apparently they didn't just made an entire soundtrack and just did it that way.
They wrote it using real instruments and then had to port it on a on an Atari ST.
Okay, which, so they basically are like a keyboard type thing, or
basically, they use the Casio keyboard and an Atari to get this ported over to the software that they needed to put it on.
Okay,
to get it to work on the cartridges.
Okay, see, now you could just program it on MIDI.
Yeah,
like MIDI is extremely useful in that you can set it to whatever you want. I'm cutting it real, making it real basic here. But basically, you tell it a value, and then you can replace that value later on with any instrument that you have available.
Yeah.
In that library. So this was pre-MIDI, which makes that even more impressive, because that means he probably had to cut a lot of those live or just double track them.
Yeah.
And wasn't able to sequence them and do a lot of things that they do now to make it easier and faster. So basically this guy, it's like Dave Grohl cutting the Foo Fighters first album, just laying down one track at a time. Okay, there's the bass. Let me do the little trumpet part and the rest of it. All right, you know.
Well, that and the technology of the time limited what you could do musically on a game cartridge.
Yeah, there was only so much space, I think, was the one thing, because we were I don't know how audio compression worked, but I don't think there was enough. I don't know if we were putting MP3s on Sega. Like, I don't know what kind of audio they were using, but if they were in like PCM format, that could have been
disastrous.
Practically, yeah, it could have been enough to take over the whole entire memory cartridge on it. So they had to get creative, I'm sure, and to find different formats that would work, because obviously space was going to be the number one issue.
Yeah, definitely. And not only that, you know, it's good music. It doesn't just fit the area. It doesn't just, you know, fit the game. It's actually really, really good instrumental stuff.
It's very, really creative melodies. You'll hear, it's good. Like from a composition standpoint, you'll have all the elements of a good song. You know, you have a melody, you'll have a counter melody, and then you'll have like melodies that play off and against the melody, rhythms that move in time with the main melody, interlocking, de-locking, good bridges, you know, extra like second endings, you know, just really well composed as far as the substance of the song, not just how it sounds, but the way that it's arranged.
Yeah, because these games, they had to loop the sound, you know.
Yeah.
So that right there, they composed it to where it would indefinitely loop, you know. It's just
comfortably, because there's some games where that it just starts over.
Yeah.
And you know, there's that hilarious one, Hong Kong 95 or whatever it is, where it's just like a 4-second loop and they didn't even try to like loop it. It just and it's not even in time. It's really terrible. But yeah, it's so well looped you don't even realize that it's looped.
No.
Cuz it's just because of the structure, like going back to because of the structure of it, because they have the bridges and the chorus, you know, chorus one, chorus two. Chorus two's got the counter melody or the second harmony that it didn't have on the first one. It keeps it varies it. It keeps it interesting. So you don't, if it's a 4-second loop and it's perfectly looped, after about 5 minutes, you're going to start to notice. 2 minutes, you're going to notice it.
Yeah.
But this is long enough and looped correctly enough, and these levels are quick enough. I mean, by my guesstimate, the levels take around 3 minutes at most.
Yeah.
That's quick enough for you not to notice if it's looped well and composed correctly.
And that's the other thing, too, right? This is the last thing I'm going to say, is that, you know, they went with a composer who used the technology at the time. Up to this point, I think this music was the most detailed music a video game had ever seen up to this point with these three games.
It's hard to really think of anything that's that. I always thought The Legend of Zelda had a nice array of music, and you know, so we're talking 8-bit, going back to 8-bit, so even more limitations as far as space. But I felt like they always hit the right notes and the right moods. I really can't think of anything else that goes this far out of the park as far as the everything on it, on the music.
Yeah.
Just can't.
So let's look at the game itself. It's a worldwide absolute smash hit that, you know, that launched Sega Genesis into the market in the US and gave it 65% of the market share here in North America.
Yeah, I mean, everybody knew someone that had a Sega or had a Sega, and you know, I personally think that what made that happen was the fact that they were bundling it with the Genesis when you bought it.
Yeah,
and because that made me so insanely happy when I opened that up Christmas morning and I saw that Sonic was already in there. Sonic 2 was already in there, ready to go. I was like, "What?" Like,
definitely.
Wow, yeah, that was amazing.
Sonic 2 was released in 92, and the crunch time used to develop it really, really caused a strain between the Japanese and American teams, because the American teams were like, we need a sequel now, and the Japanese teams couldn't keep up with the demand to get it out there. Now, they eventually did, but they had to work long hours and double teams and stuff like that, which, you know, caused a strain between the two studios.
Right, yeah, I'm sure, man.
But, Sonic 2 was pretty much the same game, except for you could spin dash.
That's a huge addition to the game, because I mean, it makes a big difference, because when I was replaying 1 before we recorded, that was the one thing that I kept missing.
Spin dash.
Yeah, because I'd want to go fast, be like, oh, okay. Well, I'm like, okay, I guess got to run. Let me back up. Let me back up and then get running. Oh, I can't run fast enough because I can't go far enough. If I can look, I get spin dash.
Yeah,
I found myself missing it.
It made it easier, too. It made the game easier.
It made it funner, and it allowed them to do more because you had a way to build up your speed.
Yeah.
You know, so they gave it really gives everybody a little bit more freedom.
And of course it added Tails. I don't know your opinion of Tails, but
I
play without him.
Yeah, I mean, a nuisance at best most times. I never really understood the purpose of him unless you were doing like a two-player, because there's a co-op, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a co-op, and there's
a duel, like, yeah. A versus.
Kinda? Yes, versus. That's the word I was looking for.
We like race to the end or something.
Yeah, and the winner is the person who gets there first, obviously. And you could switch places if you hit the right item box, which always used to tick me off when I was like right close to the end, and then the other guy would switch places with me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, I think I thought Tails was often distracting.
Yeah.
But I can appreciate how they worked him in and like 3 when he's like a helicopter, you know, and there's just other things that, you know, that he pops up where he comes in handy. But I mean, mostly I don't really think he necessarily added a whole lot to the one player game. It was more of like just like something else they added for you to look at.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I think I remember vaguely playing as him.
Yeah,
and it just felt like another Sonic, basically.
Yeah, because you could play as Tails. You could turn Tails off, turn Sonic off, or play with them both together.
And I think that was cool. I mean, I like the idea of them expanding the universe.
Yeah.
With villainy and heroes alike. But I don't know. I feel like they should have had opportunities where you, like, had to switch off.
Yeah.
You know, maybe, like, Sonic gets captured and you have to go, like, solve a puzzle or...
You have to do flying stuff as opposed to just spinning on the level.
Exactly. So I feel like he was more just like an aesthetic piece than an actual like vehicle to create more playability in the game.
Yeah.
And, I mean, and I realized it opened the door for two player, which is awesome. But at the same time, it didn't really add a whole lot to like the experience for the first player, other than just like the distraction of him like dying in the background when you're in the chemical plant zone. He's just like, boom, and you're like, dude, I'm trying to jump. He's like, boom, quit dying. Come on, man. You're so distracting.
If Sonic was a comparable to Mario, Tails was no Luigi.
No, because I mean, let's face it, Luigi is for the first one, anyways, is Mario with a different coat of paint.
Yeah.
I mean, they have no difference whatsoever. They're the exact same size. They jump the same way. But, I mean, Tails and Sonic have different abilities, but they also have the exact same abilities. I mean, you can't feign a difference of speed. It's just an aesthetic repaint. But it has its value because it added two-player to the game. Like I said, so I mean... I like Tails. I wish they would have woven him into the game more.
Okay, that's a good point. I mean, Tails was to me a distraction, like you mentioned, and I always turned him off because, like you said, he's always dying in the background and it's just distracting.
Yeah,
just totally distracting.
Or like he'll cause you to like misjudge a jump.
Yeah,
because you'll hear him boom boom like, and you think it's you, and it's like. I'm a very auditory person, so sometimes that'll mess with my head a little bit. So like, yeah, it is. It's like somebody yammering in your ear while you're trying to like memorize something or something weird, you know?
Well, Sonic 2 was a huge success, and that led to the second sequel, Sonic 3, which was basically, they didn't have to do much than Sonic 2, really. Just add some more levels.
Essentially, yeah. I mean, you had a couple of small features. The Sonic like combined with Tails, he goes into some like weird freak out mode where he's like golden or something.
Yeah.
I don't remember that from part two, but essentially like the engine and the way it's set up, the mechanics of it, it basically looks identical to part two, just different levels and expanding the universe a little bit.
Definitely. And then you had Sonic and Knuckles, which that was the first time I'd ever seen anything like that.
That was a weird game.
That was a weird game, but if it was one of those things where you could plug another cartridge into it. Now, aside from a Game Genie, I'd never seen that before, ever.
By a licensed thing by that company, because like you said, usually it was you're trying to cheat or you're trying to bypass some kind of something in there.
The Game Genie lives on in my heart.
Game Genie was fun, dude. I had a lot of fun that,
and unlike a lot of other games of the time, it had a plot, which is outstanding. In an attempt to steal the 6 Chaos Emeralds and harness the power, the evil Dr. Robotnik, has trapped the animal inhabitants of the South Island inside aggressive robots and stationary metal capsules. The player controls Sonic, who aims to halt Robotnik's plans by freeing his animal friends and collecting the emeralds for himself. Now, I never got all the emeralds. I really didn't. The first game, I knew they were dotted about the place, but I know in the second game, you had to go through that little half-pipe puzzle game.
Yeah. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I remember that. I'd spent hours on that.
That's
dude.
Another reason to turn. Oh. Another reason to turn Tails off because he loses you rings.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me! I completely forgot about that. Yes, dude. Tails was the death of me on multiple occasions. I'm like, all right, dude. Last turn. Keep it together, Tails. I'm like, no, you son of a 30. Coins, 30 rings, man. Are you kidding me? We were 4 away.
Yeah
no, I totally forgot about that.
Oh, that made my blood boil.
Oh man, it was so annoying. Yeah, so yeah, I totally did not need him for that either. Yeah.
Well, Sonic 1, that was Sonic 1 getting the emeralds for himself. Sonic 2, he's back. Dr. Robotnik is back and once again planning world domination through the Chaos Emeralds and an army of robots. This time he traps the animals in the West Island. This time, however, he's constructing an armored space station, the Death Egg.
The Death Egg? He's about to shift to Dr. Eggman, isn't he?
Yeah.
They changed his name, which I thought was just so weird. I'll never get used to that.
They did that with a lot of characters back then, because you had King Koopa became Bowser, Princess Toadstool became Princess Daisy, and now you have Dr. Eggman as opposed to Dr. Robotnik.
What is going on?
It's just like, why? Leave it as it is. Or introduce a new character.
I didn't really fully realize that all those had shifted like that. That's pretty insane. Yeah, because wow, okay, mind blown.
Sonic 3, Robotnik space station, the Death Egg crash lands on the floating Angel Island. There Robotnik meets Knuckles, the Echender.
Yeah,
never that was never don't know what that is. The last member of an ancient Echender civilization that once inhabited the island. Knuckles is the guardian of the Master Emeralds, grants the island its levitation power. Robotnik dupes Knuckles into believing that Sonic is trying to steal the Master Emerald for himself, turning the two against each other while he repairs the Death Egg.
Huh.
And then when you plugged the cartridge into the Sonic and Knuckle cartridge, you could basically play Sonic 1, 2, or 3 as Knuckles.
I remember that now. Okay, yeah. And the only thing that he had was that thing where he could, like, stick to walls.
Yeah, and he could float, too.
Yeah, that's what it was. Okay, but he still had the spin dash and everything?
Yep.
Okay, so just another offshoot of that same speed premise.
Yes. It's basically another version of Sonic in another palette swap.
With another feature added to it.
Yeah.
But wow, they had you snowboarding and doing all kinds of stuff in 3, man. They really did try to kick it up a notch each time, and I think they did. I mean, especially when you consider the time frame, it was really impressive that they were able to do all of those things and then reach back to be able to put Knuckles into all of them. That's really cool.
Excuse me. Sorry, it's late at night and I'm half asleep. Sorry about that. So let's talk about the games themselves. I mean, we've talked about a lot about the soundtrack. We talked about the plot and the mascot and everything like that. But the games are really just they're side-scrolling platform games in as they ball down, but like with super speed elements.
Right. Yeah. Oh, totally.
You start on the extreme left, and you got to finish on the extreme right. Even though you have to go, sometimes you have to go left to get to right. Which
yeah, sometimes you have to go up or back a little bit.
Yeah. There is backtracking in the game, and it's used extensively. And you kill enemies by jumping or rolling onto them, which, again, standard trope of the time.
Yeah, totally. Standard issue.
Sonic 1, obviously, you could only roll while moving, while Sonic 2 and 3, you had the spin dash available. The levels range from nature levels to casinos and mines and underground bases and lairs. I mean, the level
caves.
Design, yeah.
Yeah, very creative, because it was basically the same mechanics over and over again, but they were able to artistically swap all those things out and make them other, to totally change the mood and the feel of it. It looks like a cavern, now it looks like a mine, now it looks like a jungle, now it looks like a fortress, crystal fortress or something.
I like the ruins that were half land level, half water level. In Sonic 2. I can't remember the name of the area, but that was my favorite.
See, I remember the music for that one. It had like a harmonica.
Yeah.
And there was like this really killer seventh chord that ended like, and then it would loop, start over. I know exactly which one you're talking about.
Yeah.
So when you described it, the music started playing in my head. It's so good, man. I'm telling you, like, the music is, it's just banging just every second of it.
Well, Sonic 1 had 3 levels per world. Sonic 2 and 3 had 2 levels per world. And they always, they always ended up with the final level. You have to do a boss fight.
Yeah. The boss battle, which is always pretty much with Robotnik himself in some form.
One thing I loved about the boss battles is they used the environment.
Yeah.
It wasn't just, you know, he's the bad guy, hit him 6 times and it's over. You know, you had to dodge arrows, you had to dodge swinging balls.
There was one where you had to, like, climb up a totem pole.
Yep.
Yeah, because, and he was, like, slowly chopping it down and it had, like, fire coming out of one of them. So you had to, like, jump up and then get on top of the totem pole and then jump onto the... Because that's typically how you would get him, is jumping on top of him or jumping into him without him hitting you.
Yeah. The game used standard tropes of platform games of the time as well, like invincibility, speed boost, shield, and of course if you got 100 rings, you're an extra man. This game had continues too.
Yeah.
Which was new at the time. Because once it was game over, it was game over. I didn't realize, you know, continues were a newfound thing. And I think you had 3 continues or 2 continues. I can't remember.
Yeah, there's a couple of them. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, they were following pretty closely, you know, standard video gaming on a couple of those. But I love the ring system.
Yes.
I think that's a beautiful system because it's not as definitive as, say, the rules of Mario.
Yeah.
Which is essentially, you know, if you're powered up and you get hit, you lose the power up. If I'm not mistaken, in Japan, it was even harder. Like, if you were Leaf Mario and you got hit, it would go all the way down to regular Mario. But on this one, it's kind of like a gradient in a way, like a scale. Because say you get hit and you got 60 rings, okay, you're going to be able to grab a few while you're out, and the more you grab, the more you'll be able to grab if you get hit again. So it's always like having extra life in your pocket if you think about it.
Yeah, that was good mechanic. I just always hate getting hit because you lose everything. You lose every ring that you have.
Yeah, and my other beef, my beef with that is that, like I said, okay, let's say you have 68 rings. And then you hit a thing and you go, goes bling. You're going to tell me that is 68 rings on the screen. That's what you're going to tell me. Dude, there's like 10. They don't give you all the ones that you collected.
No.
Because like I was watching a guy earlier who had like 144 rings. Okay. That would flood the screen.
Yeah.
If he got hit, like the system would probably crash. So they weren't giving you all them rings back, so you're only getting a percentage of them. So, that was my one beef with the system. Otherwise, I think it's really fair and works pretty well.
Well, the games had bonus levels, and you needed 50 rings to activate a bonus level. Like Sonic was at the end of the level, and you jumped through that giant ring in Sonic 1. Sonic 2, you had to go through the checkpoint system.
The little halo would come on top, little rings,
And then you go into like a half pipe speed level, which I love the concept of that, and I love playing it, but like I said earlier, Tails, man.
Oh, yeah, he made it, well, I'm thinking about it now, I actually remember like using the delay of Tails to my advantage to like grab the ones kind of in the back. Because I knew that when I moved, he was going to move slightly behind me.
Yeah.
So I would stagger myself a little more to the left to grab all the coins or the rings in the middle.
Yeah.
So I remember trying to use him at the best of my advantage, but still, I mean, he would get hit by the mines more than anything. That was mainly all he was doing. So.
Yeah. Because I always remember when you use him, the you had to get more rings on that bonus level too.
Oh yeah, because you got two people, and I mean they're not even, and it's a computer person. That's terrible.
Yeah. So Sonic 3, you had a giant ring that you had to find, which would take you to a special stage, and I think that was the one with the balls that you had to turn them from red to blue.
Yeah, it was a big checkered sphere, and it had all these red or blue balls that you had to turn over. You had to jump over other barriers that were white, and if you hit one of them, that was it.
Yeah.
So it was pretty strict.
And of course, whenever you hit an enemy, you lose all your rings, and once you're out of rings, you hit an enemy, you lose a life. So in essence, all you needed was one ring.
Yeah, essentially, but and I guess if you had the one, all you need is the one, but if you have the one, it's more likely you're going to lose the one, depending on where you get hit and how you get hit. You could fall, it could go off screen before you can get back to it. So that I get that's why I understand they give you a bunch to throw out there. They throw a few of them out there, but at the same time, like, that's not 144. So you're only getting a part of it, yeah.
Well, this game had three playable characters. This game series, excuse me. You had Sonic the Hedgehog, who was able to move at the speed of sound. That's what they advertise it as.
Wow.
So
Okay. Fast.
784 miles an hour.
Okay, I said 200 earlier. That's like a warm-up lap for
Oh yeah. He's the main protagonist of the series, and you've got to play with him in Sonic 1, but you can play as other people in Sonic 2 or 3.
Yeah.
He can run really fast, he can jump really high, and he can bash down walls when he rolls. So
Yeah.
that's you know.
That was something Mario could not do.
No.
I think that was one of the ways that they differentiated themselves. Because, Mario could bash through the brick, but he wasn't running through or rolling through anything.
No.
And so, yeah. And so, for the up and coming 90s kids, the ADD generation, yeah, this was very stimulating, kept our
Mine's
attention. They
occupied.
knew what they were doing.
Yeah, Tails was introduced in Sonic 2, and he was just the default player 2 character, but you can use him as a companion or as the main character himself, so you can ditch Sonic and play as Tails.
That's neat. That's neat, the flexibility, and it's kind of like a little replay value too.
Yeah. They introduced Knuckles in Sonic 3 as an antagonist. However, he has a role to play in Sonic 1 and 3, so you can use the cartridge to play as Knuckles in one of those games. He has a special glide ability. He can walk up sheer rock walls, as you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
The enemies are basically, there are a lot of enemies in the game, and they range from fish enemies, but they all hurt if you touch them. They range from fish enemies, flying enemies, ground enemies. A lot of them had ranged attacks. Some of them just blew up.
Yeah.
You know that.
Yeah, no, I was just gonna say, and it's kind of depressing because, like, every single one of them is manned by some adorable little animal.
Yeah.
Like, when you pop it out, like some little baby duck or like a little baby squirrel or a rabbit comes out of there, and they have these big old, like, sparkly eyeballs. And it's like, oh, it's so depressing. Like, at the end, when they hit the capsule and they all come out,
Yeah.
it's like, yeah, man. It's like, ugh. So it's like, I feel good about quote unquote defeating that enemy, because what I'm doing is I'm liberating a defenseless, innocent animal.
There you go. The game has a single difficulty level, but it's like those old 90s games where its difficulty level, it's got a difficulty curve. That's the word I'm looking
Right.
for. So it goes from real, real simple levels to real, real difficult levels,
So
real, real quickly.
yeah, so the instead of it having a difficulty level, the game levels itself as you go.
Yeah, because
So
it
yeah.
makes it easier for skilled players and easier for unskilled players alike. We mentioned the music earlier was recorded by Masato Nakamura for Sonic 1 and 2. I didn't know
Yeah.
this until I researched this, that Sonic 3 was originally composed by Michael Jackson.
It was, yeah, I remember reading about that. Yeah.
But all his work was scrapped because, well, the original child abuse allegation showed up at his door, and Sega didn't want anything to do with that. Thank you very much, Mr. Jackson.
Yeah, no thanks.
We
We'll get
don't.
we'll you, did you hear Sonic 1 and 2? Like, we will get somebody awesome. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
We're good.
We'll get Nakamura back.
Exactly.
No, they instead reworked it with Howard Drossin, who would become the main composer for the Sonic series, which, okay. fair enough. The Sonic 3 soundtrack wasn't as good as Sonic 1 or 2. And you could tell that.
Yeah, for me, Sonic 1 is especially memorable because it was the first one. But 2, I think 2 objectively probably had the best music of the entire of that trilogy anyways.
Yeah, definitely. The music was written to the zones you in, and each zone had separate music, as we mentioned earlier.
It fit everything it was in. Yeah, there were it fit every style, every mood, every theme. Yeah, absolutely.
So the series itself, right, 1, 2, and 3, they were released. They all had euphoric praise as they were released.
Yeah.
Like Sonic 3 had 97% approval.
That's damn near impossible.
Exactly. I mean,
yeah, it's unheard of. That's like Legend of Zelda, or you know, other legendary games can barely get to that. They can probably only get 90%.
Well, that and the fact that you reviewed these, they reviewed modern Toms, and it's dropped down a little bit from 97% to 95%. But that's still really, really good too. You know,
yeah, it's still fantastic. Yeah, I mean that's almost an A+. So you can't really disagree with that.
I'd give the series a 9 out of 10, easy.
Yeah, it's hard to find a lot wrong with it, other than just a few nitpicky things like the annoyance of Tails, and you know, there's not really a whole lot wrong with it at all. It's a classic. It's still talked about, beloved, played, enjoyed. So yeah, man, 9 out of 10.
Like, my favorite was Sonic 2. That's the one I played the most of. Anyway,
I agree. When I got the Sega Genesis, I was a little late to the party, so I actually got it with the Sonic 2 pack in. So yeah, it was the one that I'm the most familiar with, that I've played the most, definitely. So I'm with you on that. It's my favorite one.
Sonic 1 I found too difficult. I'll openly admit that. I never got past the I've gotten past the second world before, but I never got past the third.
Yeah. I was playing it earlier, and I think I got to like somewhere around the second level. It starts to get kind of hard then. Yeah, definitely. But I don't know. Sonic 2, man, it's just the right amount of challenge and the right amount of fun.
Yeah.
It makes you want to keep going. Ghouls and Ghosts is kind of like the opposite of that spectrum. And it's like, it's fun, but it's like super duper hard and super duper discouraging at times. Like, you beat the game and they're like, oh, hey, you got to beat the game twice. It's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And then you have to play it again at a higher level. So at least they didn't pull anything like that.
So I mean, Sonic was the perfect mascot for Sega. It wanted to be hip and cool, and Sonic was hip and cool. He's everything that Mario wasn't.
Yeah, they were it's like they were saying, okay, we want to make a character, but let's make him more like Bart Simpson and less like Mickey Mouse.
Yes.
So they kind of split the difference between the like that somewhere, or because he doesn't really have like the cool catchphrase like Bart did, but just his attitude, you know, even when you sit there, and if you sit there for too long, he starts tapping his foot and, you know,
come on,
kind of looking at you all annoyed, and he'll even lay down on the ground and tap his foot like if you don't move him. So it's that attitude. Yeah, it really made him stand out.
Definitely. And of course, this made Sega the leader in the console wars, which was won by Sony, who weren't even partaking in the wars at this point in time.
They just kind of, it's like that scene in Groundhog Day where he walks up to the armored car,
yes,
right when the guy's not looking, and just goes Bill Murray was Sony.
Yes.
While Sega and Nintendo were in the armored car trying to decide what they were going to do, Sony just comes up and just right by.
We have Nintendo to thank for Sony's entrance into the video game world too.
Isn't that ironic? Yeah.
It is. Just think, the original PlayStation was going to be an add-on for the Super Nintendo.
Man, I think about that all the time. I think about how awesome that would have been.
Yeah, because Nintendo wanted to get into the CD market and get out of the cartridge market.
They knew it was an emerging technology, and they knew that the biggest perk of CDs was the fact that they held way more data than a video game cartridge. So they were smart in that effect, and I wonder if, like, I would be sitting in Nintendo tower right now if Nintendo had accomplished that. Because imagine if Nintendo, like, you know what I mean? Like, we live in a world where Nintendo owns everything because it gets so big, you know what I mean? It's like, did you go to Nintendo Donald's today? Or, like, what's going on? But,
Nintendo.
Right, exactly. Like, if they had been able to do to strong arm that corner of the market with the CD, with a place this PlayStation 1 style console, but branded in it as Nintendo, oh man, that'd have been insane.
Been game
Absolutely.
Over.
Yeah, man.
Game over, to use a phrase. But that's it for Sonic, man. I mean, yeah, Sonic. Look, I'm a big Mario fan. I'll admit, in my old age. I mean, I'm doing a lot of Mario stuff. I've done a lot of Mario stuff on
this. It's just
different,
man.
It's just Sonic is Mario is what you sit down and relax to. Sonic is what you get up and headbang to.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. I think Mario probably sometimes requires a little bit more because there's a little more puzzle elements and like you have to swim and stuff like that. We didn't talk about that, but that always annoyed me too. That thing is one of the cons of Sonic, that you have to breathe, you have to find air, or like get up back up into the air. And that music when you're about to die, I had it used to give me anxiety as a kid.
It still like, gives me anxiety now.
It just goes faster and faster. I'm like, no.
Yes, the drowning noise.
Not if you count that gurgling sound.
That's right. if you want to know what that reference is and you haven't been listening, go check out our Dumb and Dumber episode.
Yeah,
but that's really it. Sonic is in the books. I mean,
it's legendary. It's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
It's going to be played forever. It'll probably be reported and redone at some point by someone. It'll be around long after all of us.
The only problem with Sonic is it's modern games are not as good as they could be.
The only one I've really played much of is Sonic 06, but I definitely agree with you on that. I think they were trying too hard and they got away from like the core of what Sonic was.
Yeah.
Because I mean, it just seems like they needed to take those ideas and put them into a different franchise. Because all it's doing is just kind of just adding a bunch of, you know, filler on top of a really solid, legendary, even, trilogy.
Yeah.
You know?
So, what do you think of Sonic the Hedgehog? Let us know on our social media pages. Greg, it's been awesome to have you on again, man. And we will see you in a couple of weeks. I don't know what we're doing in a couple of weeks. Let me check. Hold,
probably
please.
Talking about some 90s stuff, I'd be willing
definitely
to do that.
Talking about some 90s stuff. I've got some episodes free, so I don't know, I might snag you for a couple of them. But
cool, man.
But until next time, Greg will be back. I'll be back here in a few minutes to talk about what we got going on this week and close everything out. Take it easy, everybody.
Peace.
My sincere thank you to Greg Gregory for taking the time out of his day to spend with us this week. I know he's been very, very busy and he's got a lot going on, but I appreciate every time he comes on here. He will be back in a couple of weeks where we talk about more 90s nostalgia for you. And yeah, so that's going to be a lot of fun. Talking of stuff that's coming up next week, I'm joined by a new voice, Amanda Morrison, as we sit down and talk about one of the childishly named albums of the 90s, but again, another album that's more than meets the eye, Green Day's Nimrod. Yes, it is a very, very good album. A very, very good album. We're going to go sit down and talk about it track by track and explain why it's such a good album and go through it each and every track, go through the background of it and what the songs mean and so on and so forth, like we do for every album that we go through. Okay. And, of course, talking about the stuff that we're doing, we do have continuation on our Dad Streamer series over on Twitch. That's twitch.tv/adadstreamer. That's where we are located at. And Saturday at 1 o'clock, we're going to be playing through Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door, continuing our gameplay of that. We've come a long way. We've had some really, really good feedback, and I appreciate every single person who's given us feedback. But we're almost towards the end of the game. We only have a few more episodes left, and I should have more information about that here in a couple of days, so check out next week. But yeah, that's going to be a good time. We've come a long way, and we are enjoying ourselves. I want to thank everybody who's given us some feedback on that series. I sincerely appreciate it, especially those who give feedback yesterday with yesterday's stream. For those of you who don't know, our streams are recorded live at 1 o'clock over on our Twitch channel, and if you can't watch it on Twitch, they are immediately uploaded to our YouTube channel. So if we finish, say, around 3 o'clock, by 3:30 it's up on YouTube for you guys to watch there. Okay, and that really is it for this episode. As you can tell, I'm not feeling good. I've got a little throaty, little frog in my throat, so I'm gonna go ahead and cut this off with really not a lot much more to say, to be honest. But you know, I'd rather not say something. I'd rather say nothing than say something and make me a fool, as the saying goes, or something like that. I don't know. It's rather to remain silent and be thought a fool than open your mouth and remove all doubt. That's the phrase, okay? And I'm making a fool of myself right now. So I'm gonna go ahead and get something from my throat. You guys take it easy, and I'll see you next week, okay? Take it easy, everybody. Bye.